This is Audible.
Simon & Schuster Audio presents After We Collided by Anna Todd, read by Elizabeth Louise with Shane East.
Prologue. Harden. I can't feel the icy concrete under me, or the snow settling over me. I can feel only the hole that was ripped through my chest. I'm kneeling helplessly, watching as Zed pulls out of the parking lot with Tessa in the passenger seat. I couldn't have imagined this. Never in my wildest fucking dreams would I have thought that I'd feel this type of pain. The sting of loss, I've heard it called. I haven't had anything or anyone to cherish, never felt the need to have someone, to make them completely mine. I haven't wanted to hold on to someone so fiercely. The panic, the complete and utter fucking panic of losing her, wasn't planned. None of this was. It was supposed to be easy. Sleep with her, get my money and my bragging rights over Zed. Pretty cut and dried. Only it didn't happen that way. Instead, the blonde-haired girl in the long skirts, who obsessively makes long to-do lists, crept her way inside of me, until, slowly, I fell for her so hard that I couldn't believe it. I didn't realize just how much I loved her, until I was vomiting into a sink after showing my fucked-up friends the proof of her stolen virginity. I hated it. Hated every moment of it. But I didn't stop. I won the bet, but I lost the only thing that has ever made me happy. And along with that, I lost every ounce of goodness she made me see in myself. As the snow soaks into my clothes, I want to blame my father for passing his addiction onto me. I want to blame my mum for staying with him for too long, and helping create such a fucked-up child. I want to blame Tessa for ever speaking to me. Hell, I want to blame everyone. But I can't. I did this. I ruined her and everything we had. But I'll do whatever it takes to make up for my mistakes. Where is she going now? Is it someplace where I'll ever find her?
Chapter 1. Tessa. It took longer than a month, I sob, as Zed finishes explaining how the bet came to be made. I feel sick to my stomach, and I close my eyes to get some relief.
I know. He kept coming up with excuses, and he kept asking for more time, and he'd lower the amount he was supposed to get. It was weird. We all just thought he was obsessed with winning, like to prove a point or something. But now I get it.
Zed stops talking for a second, and his eyes scan my face.
It was all he talked about. Then that day when I invited you to the movies, he flipped out. After he dropped you back off, he totally flipped shit on me and said I had to stay away from you, but I just laughed it off because I thought he was drunk.
Did he tell you about the stream? And the other stuff? I hold my breath as I ask. The pity in his eyes answers me. Oh my God. I put my hands over my face.
He told us everything. I mean, everything,
he says in a low voice. I stay quiet and turn off my phone. It hasn't stopped vibrating since I left the bar. He has no right to be calling me.
Where's your new dorm?
Zed asks, and I notice we're near campus. I don't live in a dorm. Harden and I can barely finish my sentence. He convinced me to move in with him just a week ago.
He didn't,
Zed gasps. He did. He's so beyond... He's just... I stutter, unable to come up with a fitting word for his cruelty.
I didn't know it was going this far. I thought once we saw the... you know, the proof, he'd be back to normal, seeing a different girl every night. But then he disappeared. He's barely come around us at all, except the other night he showed up at the docks and was trying to get Jace and me to agree not to tell you. He offered Jace a shitload of money to keep quiet.
Money? I say. Hardin couldn't be lower. The space inside Zed's truck grows smaller with each sickening revelation.
Yeah. Jace laughed it off, of course, and told Hardin he would keep his mouth shut.
And you didn't? I ask, remembering Hardin's busted knuckles and Zed's face.
Not exactly. I told him that if he didn't tell you soon, I would. He didn't like that idea, obviously.
He says, and waves at his face.
If it makes you feel any better, I do think he cares about you.
He doesn't. And if he does, it doesn't matter, I say, and lay my head against the window. Every kiss and touch have been shared among Hardin's friends. Every moment on display. My most intimate moments, my only intimate moments, aren't mine at all.
Do you want to come back to my place? I don't mean that in a pushy or creepy way. I just have a couch you could stay on until you figure things out.
He offers. No, no thank you. Can I use your phone, though? I need to call Landon. Zed nods at the phone resting on the console, and for a moment my mind wanders to thoughts of how things would be different if I hadn't blown Zed off for Hardin after the bonfire. I would never have made all of these mistakes. Landon answers on the second ring, and just like I knew he would, he tells me to come right over. Granted, I haven't told him what's up, but he's just so kind. I give Zed Landon's address, and he stays quiet for most of the drive across town.
He's going to come after me for taking you anywhere but to him,
he finally says. I would apologize for being in the middle of this, but you guys did this to yourselves, I say honestly. I do pity Zed slightly because I believe he had much better intentions than Hardin did, but my wounds are too fresh to even think about that right now.
I know. If you need anything, call me,
he offers, and I nod before climbing out of the car. I can see my breath coming out in front of my face in hot spurts through the cold air. I can't feel the cold, though. I can't feel anything. Landon is my only friend, but he lives at Hardin's father's house. The irony of this is not lost on me.
It's really coming down out there,
Landon says as he rushes me inside.
Where's your coat?
He scolds playfully, then flinches when I step into the light.
What happened? What did he do?
My eyes scan the room, hoping that Ken and Karen aren't downstairs. That obvious, huh? I wipe under my eyes. Landon pulls me into his arms and I wipe my eyes again. I no longer have the strength, physical or emotional, to sob. I'm beyond that. So far beyond it. Landon gets me a glass of water and says,
go up to your room.
I manage to smile, but some perverse instinct leads me to Hardin's door when I reach the top of the stairs. When I realize it, the pain that is so close to breaking back through stirs even more forcefully, so I quickly turn and go into the room across the hall. Memories of running across the hall to Hardin that night I heard him screaming in his sleep burn within me as I open the door. I sit awkwardly on the bed in my room, unsure what to do next. Landon joins me a few minutes later. Sitting next to me, he's close enough to show concern, yet far enough to be respectful, as is his way.
Do you want to talk about it?
He asks kindly. I nod. Even though repeating the whole saga hurts worse than finding out about it in the first place, telling Landon feels almost liberating, and it's a comfort to know that at least one person didn't actually know about my humiliation the entire time. Listening to me, Landon is as still as stone, to the point that I can't read what he's thinking. I want to know what this makes him think of his stepbrother, of me. But when I finish, he immediately jumps up with an angry energy.
I can't believe him. What the hell is wrong with him? Here I thought he was becoming almost decent, and he does this? This is so messed up. I can't believe he would do this to you, of all people. Why would he ruin the only thing he has?
As soon as Landon finishes speaking, his head snaps to the side. And then I, too, notice it. Footsteps rushing up the staircase. Not just footsteps, but heavy boots slamming against the wooden steps in a frenzy. He's here, we both say, and for a split second I actually consider hiding in the closet. Landon looks at me with a very adult seriousness on his face.
Do you want to see him?
I shake my head frantically, and Landon moves to close the door just as Hardin's voice slices right through me.
Tessa?
Just as Landon reaches out his arm, Hardin bursts through the doorway and blows past him. He stops in the middle of the room, and I stand up off the bed. Not used to this sort of thing, Landon stands there, stunned for a moment.
Tessa, thank God. Thank God you're here.
He sighs and runs his hands over his hair. My chest aches at the sight of him, and I look away, focusing on the wall.
Tessa, baby, I need you to listen to me. Please, just...
I stay silent and walk toward him. His eyes light with hope, and he reaches out for me, but when I continue past him, I catch the hope extinguishing in him. Good.
Talk to me,
he begs, but I shake my head and stand next to Landon.
No, I'll never be talking to you again, I shout. You don't mean that.
Hardin steps closer. Get away from me, I scream as he grabs my arm. Landon steps between us and puts his arm on his stepbrother's shoulder.
Hardin, you need to go.
Hardin's jaw clenches and he looks back and forth between us.
Landon, you need to get the fuck out of the way,
he warns. But Landon stands his ground, and I know Hardin well enough to know that he's weighing his options, whether it's worth punching Landon right now in front of me. Seeming to have decided against it, he takes a deep breath.
Please, give us a minute,
he says, trying to keep his calm. Landon looks at me, and my eyes plead with him. He turns back to Hardin.
She doesn't want to talk to you. Don't you fucking tell me what she wants,
Hardin screams, and his fist connects with the wall, cracking and denting the drywall. I jump back and begin to cry again. Not now, not now, I silently repeat, to try to manage my emotions.
Go, Hardin,
Landon shouts, just as Ken and Karen appear at the doorway. Oh no, I shouldn't have come here.
What the hell is going on?
Ken asks. No one says anything. Karen looks at me with sympathy, and Ken repeats his question. Hardin glares at his father.
I'm trying to talk to Tessa, and Landon won't mind his own damn business.
Ken looks at Landon, then at me.
What did you do, Hardin?
His tone has changed from worried to angry. I can't quite put my finger on it.
Nothing. Fuck.
Hardin throws his hands in the air.
He messed everything up, is what he did, and now Tessa has nowhere to go,
Landon states. I want to speak. I just have no idea what to say.
She has somewhere to go. She can go home. Where she belongs. With me,
Hardin says.
Hardin has been playing Tessa this entire time. He did unspeakable things to her,
Landon blurts out, and Karen lets out a gasp, stepping over to me. I utterly shrink. I've never felt so naked and small. I didn't want Ken and Karen to know, but it may not make much of a difference, since after tonight, they surely won't really want to see me again.
Do you want to go with him?
Ken asks, interrupting my downward spiral. I shake my head meekly.
Well, I'm not leaving here without you,
Hardin snaps. He steps toward me, but I cringe away.
I think you need to go, Hardin,
Ken surprises me by saying.
Excuse me?
Hardin's face is a deep shade of red that expresses what I can only describe as rage.
You're lucky I even come here to your house and you dare to kick me out. I've been very happy with how our relationship has grown, son, but tonight you have to go.
Hardin throws his hands into the air.
This is bullshit. Who is she to you?
Ken turns to me, then back to his son.
Whatever you did to her, I hope it was worth losing the only good thing you had going for you,
he says, and then drops his head. I don't know if it was the shock of Ken's words, or just that he'd hit a point where all the rage peaked and flowed out of him, but Hardin just stills, looks at me briefly, and marches out of the room. We all remain quiet while we listen to him walk down the stairs at a steady pace. When the sound of the front door slamming cuts through the now quiet house, I turn to Ken and sob. I'm so sorry. I'll go. I didn't mean for any of this to happen.
No, you stay as long as you need. You're always welcome here,
Ken says, and both he and Karen hug me. I didn't mean to come between you, I say, feeling terrible for the way Ken had to kick his son out. Karen grabs hold of my hand and gives it a squeeze. Ken looks at me with exasperation and weariness.
Tessa, I love Harden, but I think we both know that without you, there isn't anything to come between,
he says. Chapter 2. Tessa. I stayed in as long as I could, letting the water roll over me. I wanted it to clean me, reassure me somehow, but the hot shower didn't help me relax like I had hoped. I can't think of anything that's going to calm the ache inside of me. It feels infinite, permanent, like an organism that's come to live within me, but also like a hole growing steadily larger. I feel terrible about the wall. I offered to pay for it, but Ken refuses to let me, I tell Landon as I brush out my wet hair.
Don't worry about that. You have a lot going on.
Landon frowns and rubs his hand across my back. I can't comprehend how my life came to this, how I ever got to this point. I stare ahead, not wanting to meet my best friend's eyes. 3 months ago, everything made sense. I had Noah, who would never do something like this. I was close with my mother, and I had this idea of how my life would be. And now I have nothing. Literally nothing. I don't even know if I should go to my internship anymore because Harden will either go there or he'll convince Christian Vance to fire me just because he can. I grab the pillow on the bed and grip the material hard in my fist. He had nothing to lose, but I did. I let him take everything from me. My life before him was so simple and decided. Now, after him, it's just... after. Landon looks at me with wide eyes.
Tessa, you can't give up your internship. He's taken enough from you. Don't let him take that, please.
He practically pleads.
The good thing about this afterlife without him is you can make it whatever you please. You can start all over.
I know he's right, but it isn't that simple. Everything in my life is tied to Harden now, even the paint on my damn car. He somehow became the string that held everything in my life together, and in his absence I'm left with the rubble that once was my life. When I relent and give Landon a half-hearted nod, he smiles a little and says,
I'll let you get some rest.
He hugs me and starts to leave. Do you ever think this will stop? I ask, and he turns around.
What?
My voice, almost a whisper. The pain.
I don't know. I'd like to think it will, though. Time heals most wounds.
He answers and gives me his most comforting half-smile, half-frown. I don't know if time will heal me or not, but I do know that if it doesn't, I won't survive. With heavy-handed intent, yet enacted with his unfailing politeness, Landon forces me out of bed the next morning to make sure I don't miss my internship. I take a moment to leave a note of thanks to Ken and Karen, and to apologize again for the hole Harden put in their wall. Landon is quiet and keeps looking over at me as he drives, trying to give me encouraging smiles and little slogans to remember. Memories begin to creep into my mind as we pull into the parking lot. Harden on his knees in the snow. Zed's explanation of the bet. I quickly unlock my car, jumping inside to get away from the cold air. When I get into my car, I cringe at my reflection in the rearview. My eyes are still bloodshot and rimmed with dark circles. Bags have swollen up under them, completing the horror movie look. I will definitely need more makeup than I thought. Going to Walmart, the only nearby store open at this hour, I buy everything I need to mask my feelings, but I don't have the strength or the energy to make a real effort on my appearance, so I'm not sure I look much better. Case in point, I arrive at Vance and Kimberly gasps when she sees me. I try to muster a smile for her, but she jumps up from her desk. Tessa, dear, are you okay? She asks frantically. Do I look that bad? I shrug weakly. No, of course not, she lies. You just look... exhausted, because I am. Finals took a lot out of me, I tell her. She nods and smiles warmly, but I can feel her eyes on my back the entire walk down the hall to my office. After that, my day drags on, no end in sight, it seems, until late morning when Mr. Vance knocks at my door.
"Good afternoon, Tessa,"
he says with a smile. "Good afternoon," I manage.
"I just wanted to touch base with you and let you know how impressed I am with your work so far."
He chuckles.
"You're doing a better and more detailed job than many of my actual employees."
"Thank you. That means a lot to me," I say. And immediately the voice in my head reminds me that I only have this internship because of Hardin.
"That being the case, I would like to invite you to the Seattle conference this coming weekend. Often these things are pretty boring, but it's all about digital publishing, the wave of the future, and all that. You'll meet a lot of people, learn some things. I'm opening a second branch in Seattle in a few months, and I need to meet a few people myself."
He laughs.
"So what do you say? All expenses would be paid, and we'll leave Friday afternoon. Hardin is more than welcome to come along. Not to the conference, but to Seattle,"
he explains with a knowing smile. If only he really knew what was going on. "Of course, I would love to go. I really appreciate your invitation," I tell him, unable to contain my enthusiasm and the immediate relief that, finally, something decent is happening to me.
"Great. I'll have Kimberly give you all the details and explain how to expense things."
He rambles on, but I wander off while he does. The idea of going to the conference soothes my ache slightly. I will be farther away from Hardin, but on the other hand, Seattle now reminds me of when Hardin wanted to take me there. He has tainted every aspect of my life, including the entire state of Washington. I feel my office getting smaller, the air in the room getting thicker.
"Are you feeling okay?"
Mr. Vance asks. His brow lowers in concern. Yeah, I haven't eaten today and I didn't sleep much last night," I tell him.
"Go ahead and go home then. You can finish what you're doing at home,"
he says. "It's okay."
"No, go on home. There are no ambulances in publishing. We'll manage without you,"
he assures me with a wave, then strolls off. I gather my things, check my appearance in the bathroom mirror. Yep, still pretty horrible. And I'm about to step into the elevator when Kimberly calls my name. "Going home?" she asks, and I nod. "Well, Hardin's in a bad mood, so beware." "What? How do you know?"
"Because he just cussed me out for not transferring him to you," she smiles. "Not even the 10th time he called. I figured if you wanted to talk to him, you would have on your cell."
"Thank you," I say, silently grateful she's as observant as she is. Hearing Hardin's voice on the line would have made the aching hole in me grow that much more quickly. I manage to make it to my car before breaking down again. The pain only seems to get worse when there are no distractions, when I'm left alone with my thoughts and memories. And of course, when I see the 15 missed calls from Hardin on my phone and a notice that I have 10 new messages, which I won't read. After pulling myself together enough to drive, I do what I've been dreading to do. Call my mother. She answers on the first ring.
"Hello?"
"Mom?" I sob. The word feels odd coming out of my mouth, but I need the comfort of my mom right now.
"What did he do?"
That this has been everyone's reaction shows me just how obvious the danger of Hardin was to everyone, and how oblivious I've been. I can't form a sentence. "Can I come home, just for today?" I ask her.
"Of course, Tessa. I'll see you in 2 hours," she says, and hangs up.
Better than I thought, but not as warm as I had hoped for. I wish she were more like Karen, loving and accepting of any flaw. I wish she could just soften up, just long enough for me to feel the solace of having a mother, a loving and comforting one. Pulling onto the highway, I shut my phone off before I do something stupid, like read any of those messages from Hardin. Chapter 3. Tessa. The drive to my childhood home is familiar and easy, requiring little thought on my part. I force myself to let out every scream, literally, as in screaming as loud as I possibly can and until my throat is sore, before I arrive in my hometown. I find this is actually much harder to do than I thought it would be, especially since I don't feel like yelling. I feel like crying and disappearing. I would give anything to rewind my life to the first day of college. I would have taken my mother's advice and changed rooms. My mother had worried about Steph being a bad influence. If only we'd realized it would be the rude, curly-haired boy that would be the problem. That he would take everything in me and spin it around, tearing me into tiny pieces before blowing on the pile and scattering me across the sky and beneath his friend's heels. I have only been 2 hours away from home this whole time, but with everything that's happened, it feels so much farther. I haven't been home since I started school. If I hadn't broken up with Noah, I would have been back many times. I force my eyes to stay focused on the road as I pass his house. I pull into our driveway and practically jump out of my car, but when I get to the door, I'm not sure if I should knock. It feels strange to do so, but I don't feel comfortable just walking inside either. How can so much have changed since I left for college? I decide to just walk inside, and I find my mother standing by the brown leather couch in full makeup, a dress, and heels. Everything looks the same, clean and perfectly organized. The only difference is that it seems smaller, maybe because of my time at Ken's house. Well, my mother's house is definitely small and unappealing from the outside, but the inside is decorated nicely. And my mother always did her best to mask the chaos of her marriage with attractive paint and flowers and attention to cleanliness. A decorating strategy she continued after my dad left, because I guess it had become habit by that point. The house is warm, and the familiar smell of cinnamon fills my nostrils. My mother has always obsessed over wax burners and has one in every room. I take my shoes off at the door, knowing that she won't want snow on her polished hardwood floors.
"Would you like some coffee, Teresa?" she asks before hugging me.
I get my coffee addiction from my mother, and this connection brings a small smile to my lips. "Yes, please." I follow her into the kitchen and sit at the small table, unsure how to begin the conversation.
"So are you going to tell me what happened?"
she asks bluntly. I take a deep breath and a sip of my coffee before answering. "Hardin and I broke up." Her expression is neutral.
"Why?"
"Well, he didn't turn out to be who I thought he was," I say. I wrap my hands around the scalding hot cup of coffee in an attempt to distract myself from the pain and prepare myself for my mother's response.
"And who did you think he was?"
"Someone who loved me. I'm not sure who I thought Hardin was other than that, on his own as a person."
"And now you don't think he does?"
"No, I know he doesn't."
"What makes you so sure?"
she asks coolly. "Because I trusted him and he betrayed me in a terrible way. I know I'm leaving out the details, but I still feel the strange need to protect Hardin from my mother's judgment. I scold myself for being so stupid for even considering him when he clearly wouldn't do the same for me."
"Don't you think you should have thought about this possibility before deciding to live with him?"
"Yes, I know. Go ahead and tell me how stupid I am. Tell me that you told me so," I say.
"I did tell you. I warned you about guys like him. Men like him and your father are best to stay away from. I'm just glad it's over with before it really even began."
"People make mistakes, Tessa." She takes a drink from her mug, leaving a pink lipstick ring.
"I'm sure he'll forgive you."
"Who?"
"Noah, of course."
How does she not get this? I just need to talk to her, to have her comfort me, not push me to be with Noah again. I stand up, looking at her, then around the room. Is she serious? She can't be. "Just because things didn't work out with Hardin doesn't mean I'm going to date Noah again," I snap.
"Why doesn't it? Tessa, you should be grateful that he's willing to give you another chance."
"What? Why can't you just stop? I don't need to be with anyone right now, especially not Noah. I want to rip my hair out. Or hers."
"What do you mean, especially not Noah? How can you say that about him? He's been nothing but great to you since you were kids."
I sigh and sit back down. "I know, Mother. I care about Noah so much. Just not in that way."
"You don't even know what you're talking about."
She stands up and pours her coffee down the drain.
"It's not always about love, Teresa. It's about stability and security."
"I'm only 18, I tell her. "I don't want to think that I'd be with someone without loving them just for the stability. I want to be my own stability and security. I want someone to love and someone to love me."
"Almost 19, and if you aren't careful now, no one will want you. Now go fix your makeup, because Noah will be here any minute, she announces and walks out of the kitchen. I should have known better than to come here for comfort. I would have been better off sleeping in my car all day. As promised, Noah arrives 5 minutes later, not that I've bothered to fix my appearance. Seeing him walk into the small kitchen makes me feel even lower than I have so far, which I didn't think was possible. He smiles his warm, perfect smile.
Hey.
Hey, Noah, I respond. He walks closer and I stand up to hug him. He feels warm, and his sweatshirt smells so good, just like I remember.
Your mom called me,
he says. I know. I try to smile. I'm sorry that she keeps bringing you into this. I don't know what her problem is.
I do. She wants you to be happy,
he says, defending her. Noah, I warn.
She just doesn't know what really makes you happy. She wants it to be me, even though it's not.
He gives a little shrug. I'm sorry.
Tess, stop apologizing. I just want to make sure you're okay.
He assures me and hugs me again. I'm not, I admit.
I can tell. Do you want to talk about it?
I don't know. Are you sure that's okay? I can't bear to hurt him again by talking about the guy I left him for.
Yeah, I'm sure,
he says, and pours himself a glass of water before sitting across from me at the table. Okay, I say, and tell him basically everything. I leave out the sex details, since those are private. Well, they aren't, but to me they are. I still can't believe that Harden told his friends everything that we did. That's the worst part. Even worse than showing the sheets is the fact that after telling me that he loved me and making love, he could apparently turn around and make a mockery of what had happened between us in front of everyone.
I knew he was going to hurt you. I just had no idea how bad,
Noah says. I can tell how angry he is. It's strange to see this emotion on his face, given how calm and collected he normally is.
You're too good for him, Tessa. He's scum.
I can't believe how stupid I was. I gave up everything for him. But the worst feeling in the world is loving someone who doesn't love you. Noah grabs his glass and twists it in his hands.
Tell me about it,
he says softly. I want to smack myself for saying what I just said, saying it to him. I open my mouth, but he cuts me off before I can apologize.
It's okay,
he says, and reaches out to rub his thumb over my hand. God, I wish I did love Noah. I would be much happier with him, and he would never do something like Harden did to me. Noah catches me up on everything I've missed since I left, which isn't much. He's going to San Francisco for college instead of WCU, which I find I'm grateful for. At least one good thing came out of my hurting him. It gave him the push he needed to get out of Washington. He tells me about what he's researched on California, and by the time he leaves, the sun has fallen, and I realize that my mom has stayed in her room during his whole visit. Stepping out to the backyard, I wander to the greenhouse where I spent most of my childhood. As I stare through my reflection in the glass into the little structure, I see that all its plants and flowers are dead, and it's generally a mess, which feels fitting at the moment. I have so many things to do, to figure out. I need to find somewhere to live and find a way to get all of my stuff from Harden's apartment. I was seriously considering just leaving everything there, but I can't. I have no clothes except the ones I've been keeping there, and most importantly, I need my textbooks. Reaching into my pocket, I turn my phone on, and within seconds my inbox is full and the voicemail symbol appears. I ignore the voicemails and quickly scan the messages, only looking at the sender. All except one are from Harden. Kimberly wrote me. Christian said to tell you to stay home tomorrow. Everyone will be leaving at noon anyway, since the first floor needs to be repainted, so stay home. Let me know if you need anything. XX. Having the day off tomorrow is a huge relief. I love my internship, but I'm beginning to think I should transfer out of WCU, maybe even leave Washington. The campus isn't big enough for me to be able to avoid Harden and all of his friends, and I don't want the constant reminder of what I had with Harden. Well, what I thought I had. By the time I go back inside the house, my hands and face are numb from the cold. My mother is sitting in a chair reading a magazine. Can I stay tonight? I ask her. She looks at me briefly.
Yes.
And tomorrow we'll figure out how to get you back into the dorms,
she says, and goes back to her magazine. Figuring I'll get no more from my mother tonight, I go up to my old room, which is exactly the way that I left it. She hasn't changed a thing. I don't bother removing my makeup before bed. It's hard, but I force myself to sleep, dreaming of when my life was much better, before I met Harden. My phone rings in the middle of the night, waking me, but I ignore it, briefly wondering if Harden's able to sleep at all. The next morning, all my mother says to me before leaving for work is that she'll call the school and force them to let me back into the dorms, in a different building far from my old one. I leave, intending to head to campus, but then decide to go to the apartment, taking the exit to the road that leads there and driving quickly to keep from changing my mind. At the complex, I scan the parking lot for Harden's car, twice. Once I'm sure he isn't around, I park and hurry across the snowy lot to the door. By the time I get to the lobby, the bottoms of my jeans are soaked and I'm freezing. I try to think of anything except Harden, but it's impossible. Harden must have really hated me to go to this extreme to ruin my life, and then to move me into an apartment far from anyone I know. He must be pretty proud of himself right now for causing me this much pain. As I fumble with my keys before unlocking the door to our place, a tidal wave of panic crashes over me, nearly knocking me to the ground. When will it stop? Or at least decrease? I go straight to the bedroom and grab my bags from the closet, roughly shoving all my clothes in them without care. My eyes flicker to the bedside table where a small frame stands, displaying the picture of Harden and me smiling together before Ken's wedding. Too bad it was all fake. Leaning across the bed, I grab it and throw it against the concrete floor. It shatters into pieces and I jump over the bed, grab the photo and rip it into as many pieces as I can, not realizing that I'm sobbing until I choke on my own breath. I grab my books, piling them into an empty box, and instinctively, Harden's copy of Wuthering Heights. He won't miss it, and honestly, I'm owed it after what he's taken from me. My throat is sore, so I go to the kitchen and grab a glass of water. I sit down at the table and allow myself a few minutes to pretend that none of this has happened, to pretend that instead of my having to face the future days alone, Harden will be home from class shortly and will smile at me and tell me he loves me, that he missed me all day, that he will lift me onto the counter and kiss me with longing and love. The clicking of the door startles me out of my pathetic daydream. I jump to my feet as Harden walks through the door. He doesn't see me since he's looking over his shoulder at a brunette in a black sweater dress.
"So this is it,"
he begins, and then stops when he notices my bags on the ground. I'm frozen as his eyes travel around the apartment and then over to the kitchen, where they widen in shock at seeing me.
"Tess?"
he says, as if he's not sure that I actually exist. Chapter 4. Tessa. I look like hell. I'm in baggy jeans and a sweatshirt, yesterday's smeared makeup and tangled hair. I look at the girl standing behind him. Her curly brown hair is silky and cascades in loose waves down her back. Her makeup is light and perfect, but then she's one of those women who doesn't need it to begin with. Of course she is. This is humiliating, and I wish I could sink into the floor, disappearing out of the beautiful girl's sight. When I reach down to pick one of my bags up off the floor, Harden seems to remember the girl is there and turns around to face her.
"Tessa, what are you doing here?"
he asks. As I wipe at the makeup around my eyes, he asks his new girl,
"Can you give us a minute?"
She looks at me, then nods and goes back into the building hallway.
"I can't believe you're here,"
he says, and walks into the kitchen. He removes his jacket, which makes his plain white t-shirt ride up and reveal the tanned skin of his torso. The ink there, the twisted, angry branches of the dead tree on his stomach, taunt me, calling out to be touched. I love that tattoo. It's my favorite that he has. Only now I see the parallel between him and the tree. Both unfeeling, both alone. At least the tree has hope to bloom again. Harden does not. I was just leaving, I managed to say. He looks so perfect, so beautiful. Such a beautiful disaster.
Please just let me explain myself,
he begs, and I notice the dark circles under his eyes are even more prominent than mine. No. I reach for my bags again, but he grabs them from me and drops them back onto the floor.
2 minutes. That's all I'm asking for, Tess.
2 minutes is too long to be here with Harden, but this is the closure I know I need in order to move on with my life. I sigh and sit down, trying to hold back any noise that would betray my neutral expression. Harden is clearly surprised, but quickly takes the seat across from me. You sure moved on fast, I say quietly, lifting my chin toward the door.
What?
Harden says, then seems to remember the brunette.
She works with me. Her husband is downstairs with their newborn daughter. They're looking for a new place, so she wanted to see the layout.
You're moving? I ask.
No, not if you'll stay. But I don't see the point in staying here without you. I'm just going over my options here.
Something in me is slightly relieved, but then immediately a more defensive part of me notes that just because he isn't sleeping with the brunette doesn't mean he won't be sleeping with someone else soon. I ignore the twinge of sorrow that comes along with Harden talking about moving out, even though I won't be here when he does.
You think I would bring someone back here to our apartment? It's only been 2 days. Is that how you think of me?
He has some nerve. Yes, of course it is. Now. When I nod viciously at this, pain flashes across his face, but after a moment he just sighs in defeat.
Where did you stay last night? I went to my father's and you weren't there.
My mother's.
Oh.
He looks down at his hands.
Did you guys work everything out?
I stare directly into his eyes. I can't believe he has the nerve to ask me about my family. That's no longer any of your business. He starts to reach out to me, but stops.
I miss you so much, Tessa.
I lose my breath again, but remember how good he is at twisting things around. I turn away. Sure you do. Despite the whirlwind of my emotions, I won't allow myself to come undone any further in front of him.
I do, Tessa. I know I fucked up big time, but I love you. I need you.
Just stop, Harden. Save yourself the time and energy. You aren't fooling me, not anymore. You got what you wanted, so why not just stop?
Because I can't.
He reaches for my hand, but I jerk away.
I love you. I need you to give me a chance to make this up to you. I need you, Tessa. I need you. You need me, too.
No, I don't, actually. I was fine before you came into my life.
Fine isn't happy,
he says. Happy? I scoff. And what, am I happy now? How dare he try to claim he makes me happy? But he did make me happy. So happy once.
You can't sit here and tell me that you don't believe that I love you.
I know you don't. It was all a game to you. While I was falling in love with you, you were using me. His eyes well up with tears.
Let me prove to you that I love you, please. I'll do anything, Tessa. Anything.
You've already proved enough to me, Harden. The only reason I'm even sitting here right now is because I owe it to myself to listen to what you have to say so I can move on with my life.
I don't want you to move on,
he says. I let out a harsh breath. This isn't about what you want. This is about how you hurt me. His voice sounds small and cracks.
You said you'd never leave me.
I don't trust myself when he's like this. I hate the way his pain rules me, making me irrational. I said I wouldn't leave you if you didn't give me a reason to. But you did. Now it makes perfect sense to me why he was always worried about me leaving. I thought it was his own paranoia about being good for me, but I was wrong. So wrong. He knew once I found out I would run. I should be running right now. I made excuses for him because of the things he went through as a child, but now I'm beginning to wonder if he was lying about that too, about all of it. I can't do this anymore. I trusted you. Harden, I trusted you with every fiber of my being. I depended on you, I loved you, and you were using me all along. Do you have any idea how that makes me feel? That everyone around me was mocking me and laughing behind my back, including you, the person I trusted the most.
I know, Tessa. I know. I can't begin to tell you how sorry I am. I don't know what the fuck was wrong with me when I brought up the bet in the first place. I thought it would be easy.
His hands shake as he pleads with me.
I thought you would sleep with me and that would be the end of it. But you were so headstrong and so intriguing that I found myself thinking of you constantly. I would sit in my room and try to plot ways that I could see you, even if it was just to fight with you. I knew it wasn't just a bet anymore after that day at the stream, but I couldn't bring myself to admit it. I was battling with myself, and I was worried about my reputation. I know that's fucked up, but I'm trying to be honest. And when I told everyone about the things we did, I didn't tell them what we were actually doing. I couldn't do that to you, even in the beginning. I would just make up shit that didn't actually happen, and they bought it.
A few tears fall from my eyes, and he reaches across to wipe them. I don't move away fast enough, and his touch burns my skin. It takes everything in me not to lean into his palm.
I hate to see you this way,
he mutters. I close my eyes and reopen them, desperate for the tears to stop. I stay quiet as he continues.
I swear, I started telling Nate and Logan about the stream, but I found myself getting irritated, jealous even, over the idea of them knowing what I did with you, how I made you feel. So I told them that you gave me, well, I just made shit up.
I know that him lying about what we did is no better than telling them the truth, not really. But for some reason I feel some relief that Harden and I are the only people who really know what happened between us, the real details of our moments together. Which isn't good enough. And then again, he's probably lying right now. I can never tell. And here I am, already quick to believe him. What the hell is wrong with me? Even if I believed you, I can't forgive you, I say. I blink away my tears and he puts his head in his hands.
You don't love me?
He asks, looking at me between his fingers. Yes, I do, I admit. The truth of my confession weighs heavily between us. He lowers his hands, staring at me in a way that makes me regret my admission. It's true, though. I love him. I love him too much.
Then why can't you forgive me?
Because this is unforgivable. You didn't just lie. You took my virginity to win a bet, and then showed people my blood on the sheets. How could anyone forgive that? He drops his hands, and his bright green eyes look desperate.
I took your virginity because I love you,
he says, which only makes me shake my head vigorously, so he continues.
I don't know who I am without you anymore.
I look away. This wasn't going to work anyway. We both know that, I tell him, to make myself feel better. It's hard to sit across from him and watch him in pain, but at the same time my sense of justice means that seeing him in pain eases mine, somewhat.
Why wouldn't it work? We were doing great.
Everything we had was based on a lie, Harden. And because his pain has given me a sudden feeling of confidence, I say, besides, look at you, and look at me. I don't mean it, but the look on his face when I use his biggest insecurity about our relationship against him, though it kills something inside me, also reminds me that he deserves it. He's always been worried about how we look together, that I'm too good for him, and now I've thrown it in his face.
Is this about Noah? You saw him, didn't you?
Harden asks, and my mouth falls open at his audacity. His eyes shine with tears, and I have to remind myself that he did this. He ruined everything. Yes, I did, but that has nothing to do with it. That's your problem. You go around doing whatever the hell you want to people, not caring about the outcome, and you expect everyone to just be okay with it, I shout and stand up from the table.
No, I don't, Tessa,
he yells, and I roll my eyes. At that, he pauses, then stands and looks out the window, then back at me.
Okay, yes. So maybe I do. But I really do care about you.
Well, you should have thought about that when you were bragging about your conquest, I say steadily.
My conquest? Are you fucking serious right now? You aren't some conquest of mine. You're everything to me. You're my breath, my pain, my heart, my life.
He takes a step toward me. What makes me the saddest is that these are the most touching words that Harden has ever said to me, but he's screaming them. Well, it's a little too late for that, I scream back. You think you can just... He catches me off guard by wrapping his hand around the back of my neck and pulling me to him, crashing his lips to mine. The familiar warmth of his mouth nearly brings me to my knees. My tongue is moving along with his before my mind catches up to what's happening. He moans in relief, and I try to push him away. He grabs my wrists in one hand and holds them on his chest as he continues to kiss me. I keep struggling to get out of his grip, but my mouth continues to move along with his. He backs up and pulls me with him until he's against the counter, and his other hand reaches out to the side of my neck, holding me still. All of the pain and heartache inside me begins to dissolve, and I relax my hands in his. This is wrong, but so right. But wrong. I pull away, and he tries to reconnect our lips, but I turn my head. No, I say. His eyes soften.
Please.
He begs. No, Harden. I need to go. He lets go of my wrists.
Go where?
I don't know yet. My mother is trying to get me back into a dorm.
No. No.
He shakes his head, his voice becoming frantic.
You live here. Don't go back into the dorms.
He runs his hands through his hair.
If anyone should, it's me. Just please stay here so I know where you are.
You don't need to know where I am.
Stay,
he repeats. If I'm being completely honest with myself, I want to stay with him. I want to tell him that I love him more than I want to breathe, but I can't. I refuse to get pulled back in and be that girl who lets guys do whatever the hell they want to her. I pick up my bags and say the only thing that will keep him from following. Noah and my mother are waiting. I have to go, I lie, and walk out of the door. He doesn't follow, and I don't let myself turn around to see the pain he's in. Chapter 5. Tessa. When I get to my car, I don't cry like I had assumed I would. I just sit and stare out the window. The snow sticks to my windshield, blanketing me inside. The wind around the car is chaotic, picking up the snow and swirling it, completely sheltering me. With each flake of snow coating the glass, a barrier between the harsh reality and the car is formed. I can't believe that Harden came to the apartment while I was there. I had hoped to not see him. It did help, though. Not the pain, but the situation in general. At least now I can try to move on from this disastrous time in my life. I want to believe him and that he does love me, but I got into this situation by believing him. He could just be acting like this because he knows he doesn't have control over me anymore. Even if he does love me, what would that change? It wouldn't take back everything he did. It wouldn't take back all the jokes, the terrible bragging about the things we did, or the lies. I wish I could afford that apartment on my own. I would stay there and make Harden leave. I don't want to go back to the dorms and get a new roommate. I don't want a community shower. Why did it all have to start with a lie? If we'd met in some different way, we could be inside that apartment right now, laughing on the couch or kissing in the bedroom. Instead, I'm in my car alone with nowhere to go. When I finally start the car, my hands are frozen. Couldn't I be homeless in the summer? I feel like Catherine again, only not my usual Wuthering Heights Catherine. This time, Catherine in Northanger Abbey is who I relate to. Shocked and forced to make a long journey alone. Granted, I'm not making a 70-mile journey from Northanger after being dismissed and embarrassed, but still, I feel her pain. I can't decide who Harden would be in this version of the book. On one hand, he's like Henry, smart and witty with a knowledge of novels as great as mine. However, Henry is much kinder than Harden, and that's where Harden is more like John, arrogant and rude. As I drive through town with nowhere to go, I realize that Harden's words had a bigger impact on me than I would like to admit. Him begging me to stay almost put the pieces back together just to break them again. I'm sure he only wanted me to stay to prove that he could. It's not like he's started calling and texting again since I drove away. I force myself to drive to campus and take my last final before winter break. I feel so detached during the exam, and it feels impossible that everyone on campus could be so clueless about what I'm going through. A fake smile and small talk can hide the splitting pain, I suppose. I call my mother to check on the status of getting into a new dorm, only to have her mumble, "No luck," and quickly hang up the phone. After driving aimlessly for a bit, I find myself a block away from Vance and realize it's already 5 in the evening. I don't want to take advantage of Landon by asking him to stay at Ken's house again. I know he wouldn't mind, but it's not fair of me to put Harden's family in the middle of this. And honestly, that house holds too many memories. I couldn't stand it. I pass a street lined with motels and pull into the lot of one of the nicer-looking ones. I suddenly realize that I've never actually stayed at a motel before, but it's not like I have anywhere else to go. The short man behind the counter looks friendly enough as he smiles at me and asks for my driver's license. A few short minutes later, he's handing me a key card and a slip of paper with a Wi-Fi code. Getting a room is much easier than I thought it would be. A little expensive, but I don't want to stay someplace cheap and risk my safety.
Down the sidewalk and make a left,
he informs me with a smile. I thank him and head back out into the blistering cold and move my car to the spot next to my room so I don't have to carry my bags. This is what I've come to because of that thoughtless, egotistical boy. I am someone staying in a motel alone, all my belongings stuffed frantically into bags. I am someone who has no one to lean on instead of someone who always had a plan. Grabbing some of my bags, I lock my car, which looks like junk compared to the BMW next to me. Just as I think my day could not get any worse, I lose my grip on one of my bags and drop it onto the snowy sidewalk. My clothes and a few books topple out onto the wet snow. I scramble to pick them up with my free hand, but I'm afraid to see which books they are. I don't think I can take my favorite possessions being ruined alongside me. Not today.
Here, let me help you, miss,
a man's voice says as a hand reaches down to help me.
Tessa?
Shocked, I look up to see blue eyes and a concerned face. Trevor? I say, even though I know it's him. I stand upright and look around. What are you doing here?
I'd ask you the same thing,
he smiles. Well, I take my bottom lip between my teeth, but he saves me from having to explain myself.
My plumbing went haywire, so here I am.
Bending down, he gathers some of my stuff and hands me a soaked copy of Wuthering Heights with a raise of his brow. Then he hands me a couple of wet sweaters and Pride and Prejudice, saying ruefully,
Here, this one's in bad shape.
And like that, I know the universe is playing a sick joke on me.
I somehow knew you would be into the classics,
he tells me with a friendly smile. He takes the bags from me and I give him a nod of thanks before sliding in the key card and opening the door. The room is freezing, so I go over to the heater immediately and turn it all the way up.
You would think for how much they charge here, they wouldn't worry about their electric bill,
Trevor says, and sets my bags on the floor. I smile and nod in agreement. I grab the clothes that fell onto the snow and put them over the shower curtain rod. When I come back into the main room, there's an awkward silence with this person I barely know in this room that isn't really mine. Is your apartment nearby? I ask, to bring some life into the space.
House. But yeah, it's only about a mile away. I like to be close to work, so I know I won't ever be late.
That's a good idea. It sounds like something I would do. Trevor looks so different in casual clothes. I've only ever seen him in suits, but here he's wearing snug blue jeans and a red sweatshirt, with his hair messy where it's usually perfectly gelled.
I think so, too. So are you alone?
He asks and looks at the ground, obviously uncomfortable prying. Yeah, I'm alone. I mean that in more ways than he knows.
I'm not trying to be nosy. I was just asking because your boyfriend doesn't seem to like me much.
He half laughs and wipes his black hair from his forehead. Oh, Harden doesn't like anyone. Don't take it personally. I pick at my nails. He isn't my boyfriend, though.
Oh, sorry. I just assumed he was.
He was. Sort of. Was he? He said he was, but then Harden said a lot of things.
Oh, sorry again. I just keep saying all the wrong things.
He laughs. It's okay. I don't mind, I tell him, and unpack the rest of my bags.
Do you want me to go? I don't mean to intrude.
He half turns toward the door as if to show his offer is genuine. No, you can stay, if you want, of course. You don't have to, I say too quickly. What is wrong with me?
It's settled then. I'll stay,
he says, and sits down on the chair next to the desk. I look for a place to sit myself and eventually decide on the edge of the bed. I'm pretty far away from him, which makes me realize how spacious the room really is.
"So how are you liking Vance so far?"
he asks, his fingers tracing patterns on the wooden desk. "I love it. It's so much more than I ever expected. It's literally my dream job. I hope to get hired on after I graduate."
"Oh, I think you'll be offered a position there well before then. Christian is very fond of you. That manuscript you turned in last week was all I heard about at lunch the other day. He says you have a good eye, and from him, that's a huge compliment."
"Really? He said that?" I can't help but smile. The action feels odd and unwelcome, but also comforting all at once.
"Yeah, why else would he invite you to the conference? Only the four of us are going."
"Four of us?" I ask.
"Yeah, me, you, Christian, and Kim."
"Oh, I didn't know Kim was going. I hope desperately that Mr. Vance didn't only invite me because he feels obligated due to my relationship with Hardin, his best friend's son."
"He wouldn't be able to go a weekend without her,"
Trevor teases.
"Because of her office management skills, of course."
I give a little smile. I can see that.